Hello, welcome to the Millionaire Woman Show, where we'll be discussing leadership, business, and human potential, inspiring you to live rich from the inside out. Unlock your creativity, stretch out of your comfort zone, break through your barriers, take inspired action, and achieve epic results. Now, here's your host, two-time best-selling author, speaker, and certified executive coach, Deborah Kosowski.
Hello, everyone, and I want to welcome you all to the Millionaire Woman Show, where we talk about leadership, business, and human potential to help you live rich from the inside out. I am super excited. We have a really special guest, New York Times bestselling author. Ellen Rogan is the co-author of Picture Your Prosperity: Smart Money Moves to Turn Your Vision into a Reality. Ellen challenges you to look at your money through a wider lens, break through barriers to success, and think beyond the traditional approach to personal finance and prosperity. Chock full of financial credentials, she has an MBA, CPA, certified financial planner. And Ellen also has a deep-seated certainty in the importance of money mindset and beliefs for creating the life you desire. She built her own successful business by masterfully combining a classic business approach with innovative strategies that include balancing values, money mindset and beliefs, big picture ideas, meditation, and humor. Ellen is also the founder of the Abundance Activists movement, whose mission is to help the world think and act more prosperously. As an expert on living a life of success and prosperity, Ellen and her work have been quoted in national publications as the New York Times, Money, Time.com, Forbes.com, the Huffington Post, U.S. News, and World Report. Ellen serves on the board of directors for the Metropolitan Capital Bank in Chicago. And I am so excited to talk about prosperity with all of you. And I want to welcome none other than Ellen Rogan to our show.
Oh, I am so excited to be here with you today. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ellen. Ellen, you have such an interesting take on money. Prosperity for someone with your traditional background and credentials. Will you share with us how you see the importance of combining that intuitive, creative part of money with the more practical, analytical side?
Yes. Well, I've been a financial advisor for many years, worked with hundreds and thousands of people. And what I have seen over and over is that it's really not just about how much money you have. It's about how you look at it to determine whether or not you're really going to be truly prosperous or not. A lot of times people think, oh, if I just had more money, everything would be okay. But I think we can all think of people, whether you know them or they're people that are celebrities, that maybe have lots of money but don't seem especially happy, or people with very limited means that are beautifully happy. And they're not, certainly having a lot of money is not mutually exclusive to being happy, but there's something that's just amiss there. A lot of times people think if they were just good at the left brain side of things, the analytics, the numbers, the running projections, that's what it takes to be great with money. But if that were the case, then every math instructor would be like really wealthy, right? Because they're good.
True enough.
And then the right side, which tends to be more creativity and vision and your intuition, that's really discounted in the financial services industry. I speak to a lot of financial advisor groups, and they're talking about using your gut or using your intuition. But you know, if you've got the person who's awesome with money on the left brain side, comes home and kicks their dog and fights with their partner at the end of the day, that's not good. And then if you have the person who's a visionary and creative and sits on their meditation pillow chanting Om, waiting for the universe to provide, that doesn't usually work either. It's combining these two. That's where the beauty happens. And so that's where I get really excited talking about how to, yes, we're in a material world, how to handle your money effectively, but then also how to use these other skills that every single person has so that you can really bring joy and prosperity and have things just be much easier for yourself.
That's very interesting, because what I hear is there can be a disconnect in people's values, and that's where we see that struggle of where they want to go. And I have a vision board here on my wall, and I think about how it aligns with my values and what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And you talk about creating a visual financial plan. Can you tell me more about what you mean by that?
Sure. So maybe I know you're familiar with a vision board. So that's the concept of putting pictures and images of things that you want to have happen in your life on a board for inspiration. So we've taken that concept and just changed it slightly to put more structure around it to create a visual financial plan. And one of the beauties about those images is it stimulates a part of your brain that is more creative, more true to what you truly want, versus the traditional financial planning questions, which would be, so Deborah, when do you want to retire? Where do you want to send your kids to college? Like those things, which may be part of your goals, but maybe not. So the idea behind that is to take these images, but put them on a different frame. So for example, let's see if we can see this. So the frame, I don't want to put it totally over my face the whole time, that the board is set into four different sections. On the bottom of the board, those are for images or goals that you have that really don't require much money. So maybe a picture of someone meditating might be on the bottom. The top part of the board are for images for things that do require financial resources. The left side would be for goals and visions that you want to have happen sooner, so maybe 5 years or less. And the right side for things that would be for later. So, for example, on my board, I have an image of an airplane in the upper right-hand box, which represents my goal of taking a year off and traveling around the world. So probably 5 years down the road probably would require money, unless I suppose I would say this or something better. Maybe I'm getting hired to speak all over the world and that happens that way. Yeah. But that would be an example of a more money later goal. And the idea behind this is as you're doing that, then you can really develop a plan around what's so important to you. You know, it's nice to just have that image there.
Yeah.
And how can I put it into action? How can I really plan? Okay, if I'm taking a year off, what do I need to do to make that happen? How much might it cost? And so instead of just having this vision with a hope, it's a vision with an actionable plan, at least on the financial side.
Yeah. And I think what you're saying is when you have that piece of hope, you also, and that image, you're having that emotional connection to that goal. So you're more apt to take action, actually.
And you're stimulating a part of your brain that helps you notice when things come up. So another board that I have that's sitting in my closet at home, so I can see it all the time. I have a picture of the Sydney Opera House. Really want to go to Australia. In my mind, I'm getting there by someone hiring me to speak. My husband coming with me, where it's this amazing trip, right? I have this whole emotional feeling around that. But what happens is because I look at that picture every single day, the second I hear an Australian accent, I like beeline over to that person to talk to. So where would I want to go? You know, where might that be? And so it's not just that picture and that values and that emotional response, but it's triggering in me to pay more attention for those things that I've decided were more important to me than others.
And how important is it to look at that image every day? Like to have that there and say, yeah, I'm going to have it at some point. What does that do for people?
Okay, so I'm going to fess up a little bit. When we started working on the book and started creating these vision boards, the first time I did mine, it was stuck in my closet under sweaters because I hadn't gotten around to hanging it up. When I finally got around to hanging it up, I realized some of the things were actually already happening. But the second I put that board up where I'm looking at it all the time, it energizes me for those goals. It has me paying more attention in different ways. So the more you have it so you can see it, it's really programming that part of your brain. It's called the reticular activating system that helps us filter information. So it just makes it happen easier. Sometimes I recommend to people they take a picture of it with their phone, so it's with it them all the time. Maybe it's your screensaver. It certainly can't hurt to have that somewhere where you can see it all the time.
Yeah. And I think, you know, having that visual reminder keeps us on track and says, you know what, this is what I want. I got to make decisions based on this picture and keep focused that I will get there. And I think people can sometimes get discouraged because they're like, is it really going to happen?
Yeah, and that's the tricky thing. So sometimes, okay, so the discouragement part, the nice thing about looking at it is usually energizes us. Sometimes the lesson is that things happen in the right time, not necessarily your time.
Yeah, truth.
So, you know, I look back at goals from prior years, and I had a goal to have a New York Times bestselling book for a long time, to have it be bought by a publisher. And it was 2 years after I had said, like, no, it's going to happen this year, because I really thought that year it wasn't just a wish.
Yeah.
But it happened when it was supposed to.
Yeah.
So that can, it can be frustrating, but just to know that it will happen in the right time. And I find that looking at the images is less discouraging than when I write out my goals, or when you write out your goals just in the numbers of the words mm-hmm. and look back at them the next year, that can be a real bummer. And one of the things I just did was go through my phone and create a sizzle reel, a highlights reel of all the awesome stuff that happened last year. Some of my goals didn't actually hit, and I was feeling slightly discouraged. That's the bummer about setting goals. They can be, it can feel bad. But when I look back at this highlight roll, I'm like, man, I had an awesome year, and there was things I forgot that even happened.
Yeah.
So we think in pictures. You know, there was pictures before there was written language. So it's a very valuable tool for yourself.
Yeah. I love the sizzle roll idea. I'm going to have to do that on my phone, especially when you have those reminders when you hit one of those trying spaces. But also I think it works very valuable in when you're setting yourself up for your mindset of the day to see how much you've actually accomplished. So thank you for sharing that. I hope everybody listening goes out and does that and go through your reel, because I'm sure you've done some amazing things. So I know you've given us a little bit of an example, but an example of how to create that prosperity picture? What are the steps that you take?
Yeah. So do you have, again, it can be a piece of paper, it can be a board, it can be bigger than this, but just divide your board into four sections here, and then go ahead and get images. I mean, in our book, we provide 32 images just to make it easy for people. You can go online and pick images. You can go through your phone and print out off images. I just did this activity. I was in Ghana for 2.5 weeks in January and did prosperity pictures with high school and college kids there. And I also did it with some women business owners there. Well, I wasn't going to show them the images that we use here because they don't relate to them. So what I did was I went online and created a sheet that I had copies of images that would relate to something that would be appropriate for people who lived in Ghana. So it can really be that easy. And the cool thing about doing it was I saw how universally exciting this is. When you can get in touch with what you're excited about in your goals, it raises your energy level. It excites you. And that really does make a difference for your success. You know, it seems easy to think, well, if I get this goal, then I'll be happy. You know, when you do these things, then it'll all be okay. But actually, it can work the other way around. When you're super excited about something, you bring a different energy and a different passion to what you're doing. And that speeds things along much more quickly, especially if you're in business, right? No one wants to be doing business with someone who's like Eeyore, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm okay. I'm kind of sick today. Like, no
one cares. Yeah.
You want to bring your best self forward, and this is an amazing way to do that.
I love that. Yeah, no one wants to hang out with the Eeyore, of course, but no. Show up your best, you're going to perform your best, and that's just the way it is. So in addition to creating that prosperity picture, what are some top things that people can start doing to reach their financial goals?
Okay, so I'm not someone that believes in budgets. So maybe you're exhaling a little bit like, oh, thank God, right? And the reason I don't believe in a budget is because I've never seen them work for anybody. It's like dieting. It feels restrictive. Now, having said that, it doesn't mean I don't think you should know where you're spending your money, because it's really important. How can you possibly do a plan if you don't know what you need today and what you're able to save for down the road? You absolutely have to have that information.
Yeah.
But what I recommend instead of a budget is what I call a prioritized spending plan, a values-based spending plan. So that's where you look at everything coming in in terms of income, salary, bonuses, rental income, whatever it is, and everything flowing out. And especially for the things flowing out, you can make a decision. Am I spending money on things that I truly value? First of all, most people have no idea what they're spending. They underestimate it if they kind of just back of the envelope it. And typically you're unconscious when you're spending money. It's like, oh, I just do this and that because I've always done it. I can share a story of a woman who had been in business for a very long time. It's actually a family business. And she went through this activity of creating a values-based spending plan. And for the first time ever, even though she was kind of resistant about doing it, she was able to look at what she was spending. So she was in this family business she hated. She's looking at all her spending and realized she lived in this big house that at one point in her life made sense, but she was now divorced. Her kids were out of the house. She didn't even like living there that much. She had a big mortgage. She had some credit card debt, a lot of stuff, a lot of clutter in the house, and made a decision to right-size the house. Paid off her debt, was able to buy a really great condo on with a view of Lake Michigan, cut her expenses so much she realized she didn't have to stay in this family business she didn't like anymore, started her own conscious selling corporate company. So she's training people how to be selling consciously, and happy, happy, happy. All from just doing that one activity that seems for most people, it's honestly not super fun, but the result is so incredibly powerful. That's one incredible step you can take.
And that's a powerful story because people think, you know, they've had that sense of overwhelm and they think about, how can I ever get out of this situation? I've dug myself so deep, but those little step that you talked about, what she did, can be transformational about right-sizing, getting rid of that clutter, starting to actually tag mark where that money's going and really, is it helping me or hindering me from moving forward?
Absolutely. Just as you said, there's often you can be nervous about looking at this because I see that a lot. People are like, oh, I really can't look at this. They're afraid of what the number's going to be. But over and over, I found that as you look at that information, it's actually much more grounding and comforting than this whole big, I don't know what's out there.
Yeah. And, you know, with the news and the markets being volatile, you know, even in Canada, people are, you know, worried. And I know it particularly in Alberta, where I'm from, there's been a lot of changes in the economy. And it's hard not to worry about money and stay calm. I know there's a lot of people, you know, making different decisions. What do you suggest that people do to stay resilient through all of this?
Yeah, it's so important to be calm and resilient when obviously resilient would feel good. But the calm part, I think it's underestimated how important that is. I mean, just think about it. If you were freaked out about your money, what kind of decisions do you make? Yeah. Terrible ones, right? Whenever it's fear-based, they're usually not good ones. That's why people, you know, sell at the bottom of the market and buy at the top because they're not, because they're afraid was when they sell then. So, and there's actually studies on scarcity that have found that when people are truly in a dire financial situation and really freaked out about their money, your IQ actually drops. Mm-hmm. You can't make a good decision. So self-calming strategies aren't just this like, oh, how lovely to have some Zen in your life. It's actually a very practical financial strategy so that you can be at your best when you make decisions and do planning. So different ways to do that. I have been a longtime meditator. Every day, at least 20 minutes, sometimes twice a day, I sit and I meditate. What I found is that calms my brain down. So all this, you know, when you're watching the news and all this information that's coming in, calms me down enough to hear my own good intentions, right? Maybe it's going out for a run, walking in nature, prayer, whatever your contemplative practice is, it's incredibly important to have that. So that's one thing that's really important to do. We talked before that story of the woman who right-sized her house about clearing clutter. So this is not a typical financial strategy, but what happens with clutter is it distracts your attention. And so it's harder to focus on your prosperity picture, whatever you want to accomplish, if you see all these things you need to handle. grateful for this interview today, because I don't know how much of my desk is showing, but it gave me a reason immediately to clean up my desk. I mean, sometimes people think that I must be so incredibly organized because I give this advice a lot. I'm not. I'm a visual person. I know when my desk is clean, it just feels better. So I have to find different systems and sometimes just force myself to sit down and do it because I know it's important. And it can be not just paper clutter, it can be your investment clutter. So I had someone who I was talking to the other day who had like 10 different bank accounts and with not a really good reason. At one point there was reason she opened them all. So maybe it's bank accounts, maybe it's investment accounts, maybe you're hanging on to an investment because for the wrong reasons. Maybe it doesn't make sense for you anymore, but you inherited it from Aunt Sally and you loved Aunt Sally and she loved this investment, so you feel like you have to keep it. So all that kind of clutter, when you handle it, so much better. And then the clutter can be mental clutter. So the thing that you haven't done that you know you need to do. I don't know when you file taxes in Canada. Here we're coming up, people are starting to prepare. Actually, my accountant was in
the office. We're preparing too.
Yeah, so that's a thing that a lot of times people procrastinate on, but it's playing in the background. And it's hard to move ahead with the things you really want when there's things you haven't handled. So clearing clutter is a great way to be more resilient. And I'll add in one more really practical thing, which is to have a cash cushion. One of my friends, Denise, calls it a solutions fund, which I like so much better than emergency fund, because solutions feels like, oh, it's an opportunity. Or maybe, you know, instead of always having to think about that fund, like what if there's something terrible that happens in your business? Like what if there's an amazing opportunity? Whatever it is, having that cushion there of available money that you can tap into if something changes in your situation is a really great way to feel calmer, more calm, and more be more resilient.
I love how you use the change in terminology. And part of that is because when you hear the word emergency, and for people who, you know, believe in the law of attraction or just the power of our words, when we focus on, we have to put money in the emergency account, we have to put money in the emergency account, it's almost like we're inviting an emergency, so the money has to exit.
Right.
Versus having that solution. I love that. And I have to say, I really resonated with you, Ellen, when you were talking about, you know, cleaning the desk. And every time I have a podcast, I need to clear the desk too, or, you know, shooting some video. And I, my kids are like, why are we cleaning the house? You know, people are coming for dinner. Why are you washing the floor? And I'm like, well, this is a great reason, because people are coming. We can make sure. So, you know, it's great to entertain regularly for that very reason.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah. That way I can get the kids all involved in that. So I know you have this new book, Picture Your Prosperity. And tell us why we need another financial book. There's so many financial books out there. How is this different?
Yes. What we've found is that there's a lot of books that are very granular, very like how to, they jump right into the minutiae of investing, which for some people is perfect and that's what they need, but it can be really hard to plow through. And then there's books out there that are very only on mindset, law of attraction, which are helpful, but there really weren't any books that combine these two. So how do you, in a very conscious, thoughtful way, incorporate a vision board and into your investment strategy? Or how do you set up your a values-based spending plan or sock money away in a way that actually helps you reach your plan? I always say, like, if it all it took was a plan, my closet would be totally organized. Right. But sometimes we need these things to help you have it happen. So that's where we felt like we could give a broader viewpoint on money instead of just jumping into the things that have already been said in a lot of ways. And we found that people are really loving it. It's filled with stories and actionable tools. There's we've gotten really wonderful response, and people love doing their vision boards as well.
Yeah. That visual reminder is a huge piece. So I think I can see so many people, based on even the story that you shared about people right-sizing their home and putting that vision, how they can, just in that moment of meditation and thinking about it, or going for that walk in nature, that shift has already happened. You've already planted a seed to say, hey, you can have everything that you want, but you just got to take these steps, right? So how can couples use your book to be in a happy partnership? You know, that's where a lot of, you know, statistic based, we hear about, you know, couples splitting up. And the main cause of that is that struggle with that money conversation. Can you tell us a little bit more about how this book is going to help transform some of those relationships out there?
Yeah, so a couple of ways. First of all, we have a whole section talking about kind of conversations you can have with your honey about money, right? Your partner about this. Because many of times it's one person talking at the other, I'm all for delegation of duties, but people have to know what's going on with the finances. Having a clear combined vision of your future is a wonderful way to do this, to get people on the same page. So to either do a joint prosperity picture or just when my husband went through creating his prosperity picture, he had a picture of a sailboat on there. And I'm like, oh, what's the sailboat for? He said, well, you know, I've always wanted to take a trip for a couple weeks in the Caribbean with friends on a sailboat. I've been married 28 years. I had no idea this was his goal. Secretly, I'm thinking to myself, I hope he means other friends, because I could not imagine myself on a sailboat for 2 weeks. But like, what a wonderful way to have this conversation. Wow, do you really want to do that? How can we plan for that? And to get people on the same page is beautiful. And to really have the money conversations, they don't have to be hard, but they can be ones that bring you together, have both people being knowledgeable, so that both people are taken care of. If something happens suddenly to one of the people who has in the relationship that has all that financial knowledge, it's devastating to the person who's left behind if they don't know what's going on.
Yeah. And it can be challenging, you know, to have that conversation, but it does definitely open up that conversation so that you can learn things that maybe they secretly never thought of, or as they see an image, they're like, you know what, I've always wanted to do this, but I never told her.
You know? And the money history part of that is so important. I was talking to someone who's in my office the other day who I've been working with a long time, and I'm mad at myself that I never asked her about her money history, because it was really significant. And she's embarking on a whole big transformation and really freaking out. And she goes, I need you to know why I'm so nervous about this. And when I think back, I'm like, I'm so sorry I hadn't asked her that ahead of time. And if you think about your partner, I mean, we all have brought to the money conversation our background, our experience. And the more you understand that, then it can be more about like, oh, now I get it, instead of I'm right, you're wrong, which is often how we approach the money conversation with a partner. Mm-hmm.
And when you get that understanding, because you don't know how the money stories that came with them, you know, about the money doesn't grow on trees and all these other stories that they have playing in their head that they were told and have carried that with them versus what you were told.
Right. And it's huge impact. And no one in my industry, the financial services industry, even ever talks about that, about what you bring to it, because that's how people make decisions.
Mm-hmm. And then it'll be interesting to watch, because I can see you have a second book come after this, with how those stories impact the kids, you know, because they're sharing those stories. And if there's a conflict in those stories, that they're not on the same page, you can see the kids making different decisions, and that continues in their legacy.
And I don't think parents realize that their kids are taking on these messages from when they're teeny tiny.
Yeah.
100% right that what you see and what you hear are your parents fighting about money? Is it an area of issue? Do you feel like you have a lot and you don't, or you feel like you have none and you have plenty? I've seen both sides of that. And it doesn't mean we can blame our parents for our money stuff, but it's really interesting to understand how that's affected us, and as a parent to be a little bit more conscious and deliberate about the money messages you're giving your kids.
Yeah, very important. And then as you know, put tags to where money is going, and you know, you come to the place where they always talked about, you know, you want to invest, you want to save, but you also want to give. So do you think giving makes you rich?
I do think giving makes you rich. I actually think it's one of the biggest catalysts to prosperity, and it's not talked about. It's counterintuitive that, wow, if I give a lot, more will flow back to me. But if you think about it, like, if you, this is what I saw at the depths of the recession. people were hanging on so tightly to what they had. It's like, I don't have enough. I don't have enough. Being afraid to give. How can you receive if you're like this? All your attention is on not being okay. On the other hand, there's people that won't hang on to what they have, and they're like giving, giving, giving because they feel guilty about it or whatever reason. And that doesn't work either. Giving and receiving are both important. The all sorts of really interesting studies about philanthropy and wealth building. One study showed that actually people that give more money make more money. Now you think, well, if you have more money, you give more, which may or may not be true. But the way they tested this, they found if two families had the same demographic, same income level, education level, lived in the same location, one family gave $100 more than the other family, the family that gave actually made $350 more. Countries like the United States, for example, that are very generous have higher GDPs, gross domestic products. So I think giving is a really important part of not only feeling good, because we know that certainly volunteering, we know, makes us happy and makes you live longer and improves your health. But actually giving of your dollars, an interesting study found that if you give $500 to charity, your brain factors that in thinking, oh, I must be wealthy. And so it feels as good as getting a $10,000 raise, giving $500. So it's an incredibly important thing and a beautiful way to use your money as a force for good in the world, for whatever your is cause, organization, issue, family member, whatever it is, whatever that's important to you.
Yeah, because you can even see in organizations like individuals giving, and I love how you said, you know, it right away puts in your head that you feel wealthy, I can do this. But I've also seen organizations who will sponsor events or sponsor different programs, and they end up reaping the rewards because they see that organization as a giving organization or business.
Really,
and they want to do business with them because they align with their values.
Yeah, and who doesn't want to do business with good people, right? We want to do business with good people. It's a fabulous business strategy. And, you know, it feels good to do business with companies that are out there doing good in the world. I mean, if you think about bigger companies like Patagonia that's helping the environment, or Ben & Jerry's, or whatever organization it is, you feel like some people would actually buy the good from them because they're doing good, but it also makes you feel better about that company. Fabulous business strategy, and that concept, so not necessarily money, but one of the best business building strategies that I found is to give what I want to get. So if I want more referrals, I focus on who can I give referrals to. And they might not be a referral that's going to necessarily come back to me. So it's not a give to get. So it's not like, oh, Deborah, I'll send you a referral, but I'm waiting for one back. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, if I send you a referral, all of a sudden, someone who I haven't talked to in a bunch of years is going to send me one.
Yeah.
And I'm doing it because you're going to help the person I send to you, and I want to help you. But I just know that what goes around comes around.
Yeah. Well, this is the law of reciprocity, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very powerful to see that. And it's, like you said, it's not about counting whether or not it's coming back to you right away, because it will come around from sometimes where you least expect it.
That's right.
That's been my experience. But I know you've been very successful in wealth management business, but what drives you? What is your why for talking about money and prosperity?
Yeah, so it goes back to the whole giving conversation. Here's what I see. There's a huge amount of wealth that's transferring in the world between generations, people creating wealth. And my work in the world is, if I can get you to get past the conversation in your head of, am I going to be okay, to how much can I give, the whole world will change. I mean, at a minimum in the next 20 years, just in the US, $25 trillion will be transferring. If just 10% of that were used for positive change, then every child on the planet could be educated, every person could be fed, money for research on renewable energy and diseases could increase 1,000-fold. So we have what we need, but it's a matter of just loosening that grip and getting in touch with, of course, you have to know how to handle your personal finances. And then you can get to the point of, how can you make a difference? How can you use your money as a force for good in the world?
You know, I love your why. I love what drives you. And most of all, I want everybody to hear about how they can learn more about your book. Is it right there behind you? Can you show us?
It is.
Show us the cover. Bring it.
Hold on 1 second.
Sure.
Whoa. As the microphone and everything fell over.
Hold on. That's okay. We roll with it here on the Millionaire Woman Show.
That was smooth, wasn't it?
Absolutely. We're all good.
Okay. So Picture Your Prosperity. Thank you for asking.
Yeah.
You can get it on Amazon. Maybe still bookstores. Been out for a little while. Yeah. You can learn more at ellenrogin.com, ellenrogin.com. And, you know, hopefully it's going to be super helpful for you. We found people have really loved it and put it into action in easier ways than maybe a traditional personal finance book would be for you.
Well, I can't wait to get my hands on it. I'll be running out to in Canada chapters, or else I'll be going on Amazon ordering it, because I think it's so important, the message that you're sharing, Ellen, that, you know, to have yourself that picture that you can see it for yourself as real. And I think it's so important. And I want to thank you so much for coming on the Millionaire Woman Show podcast to share these messages with people around the world so we can change the world. You are indeed a game changer, and I'm grateful for you coming on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for the opportunity. I'm grateful for you.
Thanks so much. Well, everyone, that's another episode of the Millionaire Woman Show. And I want to encourage you to go on and subscribe to the show. Give us a review. Give us a 5-star high five. And also share this episode with your friends, people who need to shift their mindsets to get into that place of prosperity so they can give and change the world. So grab your book on Amazon and, be a game changer, just like Ellen.